Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Shabbat Shalom.
Sometimes, little words, simple little words, and simple little things can convey the most profound truth. Maybe you saw it in the paper the day before yesterday that they have discovered two black holes a billion light years away colliding with each other and creating waves. And those waves were more powerful than all the power in all of the stars in the entire universe. I mean, this is big stuff. And that these waves finally landed on two antennas, 2.5 miles long each, one in Washington, one in Louisiana, and they registered a few little notes. And one scientist described it as a roll from the bottom of the piano up to middle C. Simple things. Amazing happenings in the extremities of the universe. Confirming, by the way, Einstein's theory of general relativity that says that space and time are squishy and can move around and all that kind of thing. Well, I think what we have in our Parsha today is similar in the sense that what we find is simple things revealing great truths. And I would like to go through some of those simple things and actually assign some rather simple words. Some simple words to things that are incredibly, incredibly profound. And so we have to talk a little bit about the context of what's happening, Mount Sinai. And we talked about this last week, Parsha last week, where Israel shows up in where I believe it to be, and I feel very confident about it, northern Saudi Arabia is where Sinai was, not the Sinai Desert. There's nothing in the Sinai Desert that would suggest the kind of things that we experienced at Sinai. But this amazing eruption and all these different heavenly pyrotechnics in order to make an impression on us and where we would say yes to the covenant that God made with us. So you're all familiar with that. That's the context. But then in our Parsha, we have the building of the Mishkan. And what's that all about? And what are some of the words that we could use to describe it? Well, the Mishkan, of course, is a tent, a tabernacle. And, you know, Sue and I and some of you are going to Israel tomorrow. And on an earlier trip, before it became impossible, Sue and I rented a car and went on to what's called the West Bank, and we went to where the Mishkan was set up at Shiloh. It's really quite dramatic to go, because the space for it seems to really fit exactly the dimensions that were told in the Torah for the Mishkan. It was really quite exciting. But the Mishkan was this tent that we built, and so each of the different elements has meaning, simple things, but with meaning that goes far beyond what we'd experience, what we might assume superficially. So I thought of some words. And the first word that I thought of was voluntary. Voluntary. What do I mean by voluntary? Well, in our Parsha, if we were to read a little earlier than what we read this morning, we would find that Moses is instructed by God to tell the people to take a voluntary offering from all the people for the building of this tent. And the idea here is that God takes a risk on us. What if the people said, nah, you know what? Times are tough economically. This desert, who knows what's going to be, you know? The promised land, we'll get there, but, you know, I got to get a job and there's no jobs and, you know. But instead of capitulating to fear, the people, out of generosity and out of a response to what occurred at Sinai, they give generously of gold and silver and precious stones and amazing cloth and fabric, and all these things are going to go into the building of the Mishkan. So that's one word that occurs to me. Let me ask you a question. Those of you, many of you know about the building of the Mishkan. You've read it. What's another word that occurs to you when you think about the Mishkan? Anything come to you? Humble, that's it, yeah. In other words, humble in one sense. It's not as big as some palace, but humble, yeah. What's another word? Think about, it was made of stuff. So what's a word that might go with that? How about physicality or physical? That work for you? Physical, okay? So it's the concreteness of it all. And we could call it the physicality of spirituality, or the concreteness of spirituality. Think about it. In the desert were rocks and spiders and scorpions and little scrubby bushes. And then this incredible contrast with that and the physicality of these magnificent elements that were used to build the Mishkan. But it's all very physical. And that's important. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a little while. Here's another one that comes to me. Beautiful and valuable. Beautiful. Here we talk about the aesthetics of faith. The aesthetics of faith. Listen to this. In fact, we read it earlier, but let me read it to you again. Make a lampstand of pure gold, hammer it out its base and shaft, and make its flower-like cups, buds and blossoms in one piece with them. So what do we have here? We've had this voluntarism, everyone coming together and agreeing to build the Mishkan, God taking a bit of a risk with us at that point, right? And then we have this physicality, we have the Mishkan, which really, I should tell you, is kind of a mini-universe. It's intended, in part, to be a kind of mini-perfected universe that will one day exist. And that's why you have an absolutely cubic Holy of Holies, or Kiddush Kiddushim. It's all intended to convey this, and there's lots of other symbolism that we don't want to take the time to get into, but it's a mini-universe, but it's made up of physical things, and it's made up of beautiful things. Now, I have a vision for something. We love our Ark, and we're grateful for the gentleman many years ago who built it for us, but you know what I'd like to see us have? I'd like to see us have a new, beautiful Ark. Would you like that? Any of you? Wouldn't that be cool? I mean, a bigger arc that might go a little bit more in each direction. We have to see about that. But something that is just more aesthetically beautiful. And I'm hoping that we can do that. Now, of course, we've made progress aesthetically. Where is Sherry? Cheryl. Cheryl is around somewhere. There's Cheryl. And she made the beautiful pieces here suggesting fire and movement and all. So we're talking about the aesthetics of faith. Very, very important. And part of that's part of the reason when you come here that we try and be something of a class act. Now, that's not because we have this ego need to do things as well as they do it at the Metropolitan Opera, but rather because there is a certain communication about the glory of God which is mediated through people who try and do it right and don't just endlessly say, well, you know, God understands, and just kind of baptize our mediocrity. That's not where we're at. We want to do things really well, and that's why our musicians try and do things really well, and we take it seriously, and why our readers do. And again, the aesthetics of what we're all about, we're working on that too. So that's another lesson from the Mishkan. But I got another one for you. And that is the word intimate. The word intimate. See, the whole idea of the Mishkan is that it represents a perfect universe where God is present with us. And so, in the building of the Mishkan, we read this. I'm reading from chapter 25 of the book of Exodus, verse 22. There, above the cover between the two cherubim that are over the ark is of the covenant law, I will meet with you. Got that? I will meet with you. And give you all my commands for the Israelites. And so the idea is a kind of a place of intimate connection. Now again, on Saturday mornings, imperfectly, but we try and create an environment where we can enter into that intimacy as well. Never as great as it will be one day, but still meaningful. And that's a matter of choice. You've got to give yourself to that. Otherwise, it won't happen for you. You got to concentrate on the words and say, oh, my mind's wandering. I got to call it back. You know what I mean? And standing and sitting and moving, all of those things are part of that. See, the Mishkan, there's a great rabbi, Maimonides, Rambam, and his view of the Mishkan is that the Mishkan, this little portable universe where Israel meets God, is supposed to be a way whereby his presence is carried with Israel through the centuries. In other words, it is a little mini universe, or maybe more accurately, it is a mini Sinai that we carry with us wherever we go. And interestingly enough, what do you think it is that's the sacred drama that we enact here every Saturday morning? What do you think it is? It's what? What's, I just said it. You tired? Sinai. We reenact Sinai every Saturday morning. And Jews have been reenacting Sinai ever since. It's a portable Sinai that we take with us. A portable example of God's great intimacy with us. Because that moment of greatest intimacy in Jewish thinking was at Sinai. However, in Messianic Jewish thinking, we have to take it a step further, which we will right now. The idea of the portable Sinai. Now, all these things that we've talked about, these words that we use, the physicality, the aesthetics, the beauty, the physicality, all that stuff, the intimacy, the voluntarism, all of that can be carried forward as we think about Messiah Yeshua. You see, Messiah Yeshua is not a replacement for all these things. He is the flowering of all these things for Israel. And so, when we view him as the one who brings into full flowering all of these institutions and thoughts and ideas. In fact, there's a wonderful verse from the book of Romans, chapter 10 and verse 4, where it describes Yeshua, and I'll give you the word in the original language. He is the telos of the Torah. The telos, think of a telescope. It goes out like this. He is the telos. He is the goal. He is the goal of the Torah. Not the end of the Torah, the way some translations have it, end meaning it's over, but rather he is the highest expression, the flowering, and the goal. So let's think about Yeshua, and let's think about physicality. Now, this is an amazing thing. Think of the baby Yeshua. He wore a diaper. He cried when he was hungry, right? He wanted to be picked up. And if these words seem strange to you, it's because in our trying to maintain his humanity and his uniqueness as part of the expression of God's very reality, in keeping that in balance, sometimes we're so over here that we have a difficult time thinking of him with diaper rash, you know. But, you know, he was a baby. He would cry. This is a mysterious thing, and how it all works, of course, we'll never know. But clearly, what we have here is God showing the premium he places on the physical. You see that, everybody? See, it's not true that the greatest, highest life is a spiritual life, a disembodied spiritual life. That's not the highest good. The physicality of Yeshua's coming among us, and especially epitomized in his resurrection, shows that the highest good is not disembodied spirituality, but there's a kind of physicality that we're going to experience throughout the ages, but we would suggest this, that the physical on that plane plays by some different rules than the physical that we know. That fair? Dr. Howard Storm is with us, who had one of the most credible, to my mind, the most credible near-death experience I've ever heard. Maybe he can tell some of you it at lunch. But Howard, how does that sound? A higher physicality. Does that fit what you were shown in your... Yeah, okay, good. So the physicality, God just does it this way. He values physicality. And what that means is that this physical world that we live in is important and not something to be transcended the way a Greek philosopher would want us to transcend it. See, back in those days, you know, old Aristotle, he would say, oh, the body is the prison house of the soul, you know? And you want to get away from the body, the physical. And the Gnostics, they really went to town on this one. The physical is evil because a bad God created it. I've talked about that before. But that's not the picture. The picture in the Bible is that the physical is good. Kitty cats, trees, flutes, grandchildren, the disciplines of life, right? Now, here's one that you're not going to like. The political is part of the physical order. Sorry. Sorry, but it's the way it is, right? The art of governance is part of the reality that we have to deal with. That's why, as followers of Yeshua, even though this time around you'd almost love to opt out of the whole scene, because, right? Well, yeah, I know. Don't get me started. But the point I want to make is that really that's not an option, because God's involved in the physical, you know? And if you don't give it your best shot to understand what's happening at the level of that level, then you're just going to surrender to the field to people who don't care at all and are just going to be exploited, you know? Now, I'm not preaching a political message. You'll have your own opinion as to who approximates the values that we want to inculcate and reflect best. All I'm saying is it's all part of the physical. You think about the baby Yeshua. Now, let's talk about the other word that we use, and that is the word beautiful. Now, here's a paradox. The Mishkan was really beautiful. Why? Because God is really beautiful. I mean, in his presence, what I've heard from Pastor Howard and what we can infer from past eschatological type passages in the Bible, like in the book of Revelation, it's really beautiful, and we might not even have words to explain it. It's too beautiful, but it's beautiful. And worship is supposed to be that way, and there's a case for congregations to give it their best shot within the limited resources that we have to be things and do things that are beautiful. But here's the paradox when it comes to Yeshua. The first time around, he's specifically described as not being beautiful in the sense of aesthetically pleasing, the kind of guy who would you'd gravitate toward because of this or that. He was not a movie star. As a matter of fact, you know the passage in Isaiah 53. He had no form that we would, chamad, that we would desire him. That's not the way he came. He didn't come in grandeur and all that, and with all the accoutrements of beauty that you would expect a ruler to come with. But when he comes again, it's another story. There, it's going to be beautiful, and it's going to be magnificent. And the way it's described in the book of Revelation, where he dwells, etc. Again, it's all metaphorical language, but we still get the idea. Okay, when he comes in, again, he will appear in magnificence, and his magnificence will make the world magnificent and beautiful. Isn't that great? Don't you love that? See? Really important stuff. Now, intimacy, we use that word talking to Mishkan. Well, we think about the intimacy that Yeshua modeled and taught. He said to his followers toward the end of his life, you know, you've called me master and you're my servants, and that's true. But he says, now I call you friends. I call you friends. And so that sense of intimacy is part of the whole picture with him. And then we use the word valuable. When we talked about the elements of the Mishkan, the gold, the silver, and all the other valuable cloths and things. And Yeshua, of course, is precious to his Abba, and we in him are precious as well. Okay? And so, talk about precious. There was a point when there was real doubts about how precious he was. which recorded in Yohanan chapter 6 during a time in the Galilee when he said, you know, you have to eat my body and drink me. And a lot of people said, what is this? And they just said, listen, I've had it. Maybe the guy does wonders, but I just can't hack this. It's too weird. Just too weird. And so a lot of people took off. But he turned around and his immediate entourage, his immediate followers were there. And he said, well, what about you guys and you women? Are you leaving? And one of them, I think it's Cephas, says, where are we going to go? You're the one with the words of eternal life. I mean, you're precious. And we have nowhere else to go. So last of all, this word voluntary. Remember in Exodus 25, the people voluntarily. Well, really, it relates very nicely to what we read in our Besorah portion today, and Rabbi Nathan alluded to it. And that is that, and this is particularly true in John, but it's true to a lesser degree in the others. But in we call it Yohanan, the book of John, you find Yeshua the divider. He's teaching, he does a miracle, and there are two responses. One is, he does these things because he is the son of Baal-zebub. The origin of his power is satanic, and we don't want to go with him. Or I'm sure other people said, oh, he's just using psychological tricks. But other people are saying, no, hey, listen, these miracles are real, and what Messiah? What would you expect of Messiah to do more miracles than he's doing? I mean, look at what he does. And so Yeshua is the divider, suggesting that he leaves always, following him is always predicated on the idea that just as back then, so it is today, we all have freedom. Human free will, very important. Many years, I am a recovering Calvinist. I've long recovered, believe me. I used to hold to a view which so emphasized God's sovereignty that human freedom became something it was not part of the equation. So I've changed my view on that dramatically. But anyhow, the idea is it's all voluntary, following him. He's not going to twist your arm. You're going to have to, for whatever reasons work for you, whether it's more intellectual stuff or more heart stuff or whatever works, you're going to have to make the decision if you're going to really follow this guy. And for us as in a Messianic Jewish community, to be Jewish and to follow him is a very difficult thing. It is tough. It's tough for anybody to really do it right. But there are special challenges. You know, we're at the point where, you know, Western civilization is predicated on the idea that you have Jewish, you have Christian, and these are mutually exclusive categories, and that's the way they will always be. And here we are saying, wait a minute, we don't accept the categories. I mean, that takes chutzpah. And there can be some real rejection that comes from that, and some of you know what I'm talking about. I've experienced it, and you have too. Well, there's free will. Are you going to opt out? Are you going to go to sleep? Or are you going to say, well, you know what? When the facts are in, he's the man. I'm sticking with him, and that's all there is to it. See, that's it. And freedom, we all have it. And so little things, pieces of gold and silver and cloth, all put together, make a beautiful picture. Simple things revealing profound truths. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.